Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, a founder that, you know, basically he's been at it now for close to 13 years with his company. I mean, it's really an incredible rocket ship. They've raised over $300 million. And we're going to be talking about, for example, like how you go about team building, how to think about product, you know, and how to have that product focus. Then also how to think about culture too, you know, especially cutting through the noise, through what you hear out there, and really having the fundamental building blocks, you know, to be able to get that team involved, as well as some of the learnings, you know, and lessons learned, you know, building the business, especially, you know, during the last years, and how to think about the years to come. So again, brace yourself for a very inspiring conversation. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Ray Chauhan. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Alejandro. Looking forward to it. I'm a big fan.
So originally born in London, born in West London, and you had there a family, you know, where your mother was a seamstress, your father was a postman. Give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
Yeah, really blessed, really wonderful parents. My parents originally came from North India, so a district of India called Punjab. Their parents prior to that, well, on my mum's side, her parents came over from India, I think in the 50s and 60s. So that typical story, Alejandro, of kind of first generation immigrant, my parents being. And yeah, just a simple working class upbringing, but lots of love, loads of extended family. And yeah, I realize with age how precious growing up with parents like that, but also lucky enough to have an extended family where you learn really good values and lots of lifelong learning lessons. So yeah, just a really simple upbringing. And yeah, nothing to complain about. I feel very blessed.
So you got started, you know, with media sales out of all things, no? So how were those early days for you in the workforce?
Yeah, so I joined an organization called Sterling Publications. I think it's now branded as SPG Media. And that was a throwback organization. So like most young kids at 21, 22, you're just trying to find your feet, dip your finger in a couple of pies where you think you might find a passion or some form of future. And so ended up at a media sales organization in the city of London, in a part of town called Paddington. And just London as a location globally, even till this day, is the home of publishing. So Sterling was a kind of a 70s, 80s, and 90s story of being one of the largest B2B publishers within Europe and the world at that time. But that organization was a very hardcore, ultra hardcore sales environment where it was pure cold calling and you're literally trying to get a hold of chief executives and you're basically selling ad space in magazines, in B2B publications. And I ended up in the medical device space. So as a young kid, trying to learn the industry, learn the personas, learn the latest paradigms within a space. But I found that immensely difficult. And actually that particular role, I ended up getting fired. I remember it very clearly 2 days before my sister's wedding. So I learned a ton. I had an amazing manager there, a chap called Andrew Lush, who basically treated me like his son and allowed me to stay in his team for close to 6 months, even though I wasn't really performing. But in that 6 months, Alejandro learned so many lifelong learning lessons when it comes to commercial and framing a proposition. So that just that time and his patience, I have a kind of lifelong gratitude for that period, because that 6 month boot camp gave me a tremendous platform to go on to a company called Data Monitor, where I spent 8 years and spent most of my 20s and had an absolute blast and built some really, really good, meaningful relationships. So that was kind of the media sales 6 month stint in my career.
And I guess, you know, when you were doing all that cold calling, you know, one of the things that is very interesting here is founders being exposed to rejection, and especially during the first times, you know, that you're rejected, you know, it's not easy, it's not fun. I guess, when you're cold calling, especially during the first calls, you know, it's tough. It feels weird. You know, you're embarrassed. You're shy. I guess, how was that, you know, for you of going through those motions of really experiencing people rejecting you and rejecting what you had to offer them or sell them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, yeah, that's probably the most hardcore environment at those 10 years in your early 20s where you have to learn, and in time, and it's painful, you start to learn how to embrace rejection. I think that's the key part. Getting rejected just happens, right? It's just a force of nature when you're trying to cold call and reach out to senior decision makers. But then it's that mental journey of going home and you just got punched in the face 50 times where you literally haven't got a hold of anyone. No one's really listened. Your colleagues around you can see you're struggling. That's part of it as well. And then going on that mental journey over the weeks and months where you just start getting used to and in a way appreciate the learnings of rejection and kind of learning that bounce back ability and kind of going in the next day with a fresh mind and still keeping that positive attitude. So I would say that's the key part of it. I think those learnings, Alejandro, stay with you throughout your whole career and generally just life, because you've absorbed so much rejection early in your career on a professional basis, you then get used to getting punched in the stomach generally, right? And you learn that, look, it's not game over. It's more of a learning opportunity. So that's my view on rejection and why I think it's such a blessing to have that experience, especially when you're young.
So the most immediate step, you know, before you got started with becoming an entrepreneur was data monitor, no? And you there spent over 8 years and you scaled through the ranks, you know, during this time. And I guess, you know, this was part of the foundation of PatSnap too. So what was the experience there? And how would you say that this, you know, helped you to get going, you know, with your entrepreneurial journey too?
Yeah, for me, that was my foundation. Without Data Monitor, I wouldn't be speaking to you today. Again, and it's also a little bit of luck as well. The timing of when I joined, Alejandro, the business was at a really exciting time. Also, the batch, the cohort I joined, that vintage, now when I see them on LinkedIn, was an insanely good, talented vintage. So joined that organization in February 2004, and the cohort I was joining in were just amazing. So that organization, just to give you the color, what that business did, that was a market intelligence provider. So the current analog might be like a Gartner, a Forrester. You might know those intelligence providers in the IT space, and then in the finance world, you might hear of Bloomberg. But basically, it was the information services industry. But what was really special about that company was when I joined right at the beginning of a 3 to 4 year exit plan. So I joined the business where the chief executive, who's very talented and gone on to carry on doing great things, was being mega aggressive on organic growth and trying to expand market share. So what that meant is they were being very aggressive on the sales side and also creating a very compelling, generous environment where if you're good, you can have potentially life-altering, and in some circumstances, for some of my colleagues, life-changing outcomes in a relative small space of time. So what ended up manifesting is me working with a bunch of very hungry, really talented guys and girls, having loads of fun every day. Alejandro, was an absolute blast. I felt like I was at a cool university, but getting paid to attend. And then the learnings, I was surrounded by so many talented people, some a lot older, some similar age, some younger. And I was literally just learning through osmosis, sitting on a sales floor, learning and growing. And again, because the timing was very fortuitous in that company, opportunity to rise up the sales organization, get global exposure, get exposure to multi-markets, life sciences, automotive, the academic markets. So all of that entire experience gave me the foundation and confidence to, when I met the founder and CEO of PatSnap, a chap called Jeffrey Tiong, to have a lot to offer to joining a founding team and building a company. So yeah, Data Monitor was a life-changing, and I'm forever grateful.
How does it happen, you know, with Patsna? Because I know that there was a little story there in Disney World.
Yes. So at my last ever business trip with Data Monitor, because the company prior to 2012 got acquired by a large group called Informa, I was attending a convention that I went to every other year and just walking around. And at that time, I was reflecting on, look, I need to do something different. I've got this entrepreneurial desire. I can't code. I can't program. And I'm in a situation where I've got a really strong commercial background. I need to meet a product-orientated stroke technical founder. So at this convention, I was just kind of cruising the floor, and I walked past a booth, and that was a PatSnap booth, and that's where I met Jeff. We just started getting talking, and he was like, look, I'm trying to build out the business, but commercialization and turning on the revenue has been a challenge, which is typical for most technical co-founders. We just started getting talking, and off the back of that, started building out the founding team. So he was like, looking for someone more from a commercial background. I'm saying, I'm looking for more of a product guy. I'd love to work in startup land. And that's where the engagement was consummated. So I went back to the UK after the convention and basically started the PatSnap commercial push from my apartment. And again, very fortunate, was able to attract a colleague from Data Monitor. Again, was very hungry, very driven, very talented, to also join me to kickstart the commercial machine. So that's the kind of genesis of PatSnap in terms of commercially scaling.
What ended up being the business model? How do you guys make money at PatSnap?
So before I joined the mission, it was a free public website at that time. And then when I joined the journey, the goal was to take it behind a paywall, classic SaaS, Alejandro, annualized upfront payments and a pure SaaS subscription model. So, and we've stuck with that model literally ever since. And early this year, we passed over $100 million in ARR. And that kind of commercial business model hasn't really changed since then. So pure SaaS, typically annual upfront payments, and typically customers will subscribe for a year. And in some cases might go for a 2-3 year contract.
So then for you guys too, you know, like, what was that? And you were alluding to it, you know, like, how did you guys go about having consistency about building the team and also not listening to the typical text VC advice?
Yeah, that was that story is interesting. So the beginning thesis, if I look back, was very correct. So I really leveraged my Data Monitor network to try to invite and get really talented people into the business early on. I was successful in kind of selling that story and getting people who are 10x better than me to join the business. And they done a great job. A bunch of them were in the business for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, orientated in commercial, some done slightly different roles, but net me leveraging my existing network of people who are really capable and also I trust was like pivotal it from that kind of zero to $40 million in ARR, where I think we made the typical mistake, and I've learned now it's quite a typical mistake, is getting sucked into that kind of textbook advice of, okay, you've gone past your original team. You now need to hire someone who's got said experience, said resume, more of a dashboard type revenue leader to scale to that next level. And my learning was, in most situations, well, I can comment on our context, that wasn't the right decision. Like, not continually backing your team that got you there in the first place to the next stage is a painful mistake. And it took us a good 3-4 years to get that momentum, because during that time, we hired a new management team in 2019, lots of change. A lot of the original guys started leaving the business, and it was kind of a very transitional period. And I felt we really lost some of those original roots in the business. And it was just a painful and expensive learning lesson. So my takeaway is, like, think very clearly before you start thinking about making adaptations, changes. to the original team to help, which helped get you there in the first place. So, and I see that similar mistake across so many startups who end up running the same typical VC playbook and end up paying the price, and it's an expensive price.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com, and we would love to take a look at helping you out.
So tell us too about culture, you know, because obviously we're talking about people. Let's talk about culture, you know, and that foundation, and also cutting through the noise to have the proper culture in place.
Yeah, I mean, culture to me now, I think about post-pandemic. So leading up to pre-pandemic, I would say 2012 to 2018, to 2019, we had a healthy, relatively simple, purely focused on high-performance culture. So we didn't get too complicated and overbearing on sending culture messages. I think a lot of the culture was we had really talented people, Alejandro, and a lot of them led by example. To me, that was probably the best way to create a culture, right? By doing, and I was lucky enough to have some amazing people in the team in sales management, in customer success. We had a small part of the product organization in Europe at that time as well. So people were just leading by example rather than hiring a flashy HR person and doing fancy PPTs talking about culture. So it was very much by example. Where things changed a lot was during lockdown, where maintaining that performance, maintaining that rigor, that pace became really difficult because you were trying to build and scale and manage a team virtually. And I think for us, we lost a lot of that original culture during that period. Probably like a bunch of other companies, right? Because you're recruiting and retaining basically in a virtual world, which was a new muscle for anyone to learn and flex during that period. So coming out of lockdown, when we started getting face-to-face, we'd learned, holy shit, we haven't probably hired correctly. And now we've got to rebuild again, but more in an in-office style and be closer to the detail. And again, from 21 to late 22, that was a body of work to realign and bring back that high-performance culture while managing all the hangover from the money printing. 2021 was peak woke. And as you probably saw, right, a bunch of technology companies going, God, we've got this debt now on just being too laissez-faire with our standards. So we spent a good 1.5 years trying to bring back that accountability, that self-starter culture and responsibility within the team. And I think now, touch wood, going on, look at 2023 onwards, I think we've brought a lot of those, people might call it old school, Alejandro, but some of those classic values back, and that's manifesting in the revenue performance for us.
So then, as we're talking about people too and culture, let's talk about VC, you know, raising money, because you guys have raised over $300 million. What has been the What have been the emotions too and the cycles that you guys have gone through, you know, in order to be able to bring those investors as part of the journey?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, if I break it down into the early rounds, so if I look at our Series A and B, that was pure revenue-based investor attraction, right? Like, we had exceptional organic growth back between 2012 and 2016. And at that time, if you recall, all those kind of early stage investors, let's face it, where they really lean in is looking at momentum and good compound quarter-on-quarter growth stroke annual growth. And we had those numbers in the bag combined with a really compelling narrative of a fast-growing market, which had exceptional fundamentals. When I mean fundamentals, we sell into the R&D and patent space. And that industry, literally for the last 40 years, if you look at corporate R&D spend worldwide, Alejandro, that number's gone north for the last 50 years. It's bulletproof, recession-proof. So we had good ARR growth backing into an industry and persona which has exceptional fundamentals. So from Series A to Series C, I would say that was the nuts and bolts of attracting some really good brands in the venture markets. Post that, I would say during kind of that pandemic period, and 2021 was a champagne year and crazy year for everyone, let's face it, right? But we were able to somehow sustain meaningful organic growth during lockdown. So we were kind of trending right on the fairway of attracting great investors. And we feel very lucky to have SoftBank on board as kind of one of our lead investors and various other names. So I would say in 2021, it was that 2020 momentum and revenue still trending well, and then being in the right place at the right time to raise a meaningful round at a meaningful valuation. So, and that puts us in really good stead this year and hopefully going into the future.
And talking about the future, you guys have recently gone through the motions of what you know, things are going to look like, you know, in the next decade. So I guess in that regard, if you were to go to sleep tonight, Ray, and you wake up in a world where the vision of PatSnap is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Well, the ultimate North Star for us is becoming the lead AI-enabled intelligence platform for R&D teams and also patent teams around the world. We're on that journey now. So if you look at our value proposition, we have a horizontal value proposition where we have customers from automotive to FMCG to aerospace and defense to advanced manufacturing, but also 4 or 5 years ago, we've built a life sciences business which sells to biotech and pharma. That part of the organization is an absolute rocket ship at the moment. So that whole AI-enabled drug discovery, drug delivery, we have some tremendous intelligence capabilities in that market and some very unique value edges in that space. Also, we're doing the equivalent in material science. So again, stepping back, we think this decade will be a spectacular decade when it comes to advanced materials discovery. So next generation materials, which enable quantum computing, bringing back supersonic air travel at the price of a premium economy ticket, all of that fundamentally material science problems. And again, we've got AI-enabled intelligence tools attacking the materials market. So if I hopefully project into 4 or 5 years, I'd like to think PatSnap is considered one of the main AI-enabled intelligence platforms, which are the gold standard for R&D populations and companies, and also IP teams at technology companies around the world.
So talking about the future here now, I want to talk about the past, but doing so with a lens of reflection, because, you know, close to 13 years that you've been pushing this, you know, gives for a lot. I mean, 13 years in startup world is like 200 years in corporate, right? So I guess, you know, throughout the cycles that you guys have gone through and all of that, imagine if I was to bring you back in time, you know, perhaps I bring you back to Disney World, you know, maybe you're still in one of those rides, you know, having a blast, you know, wondering about the future. And let's say you're able to sit right next to your younger self, to that younger Ray, and you're able to give that younger Ray a piece of advice, one piece of advice before launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
Good question. Focus keep it simple and execute well. One learning I found, and I'm not a victim to this. I'm sometimes the instigator of this because it's my personality. You can sometimes get attracted by shiny toys where you've got momentum in a particular market. Things are going well, but human nature is curious, isn't it? You want to do more. You want to amplify what you have. And I sometimes found when you lose focus and you get sucked into certain rabbit holes, all with good intention, the net situation can sometimes be negative because you're going away from your core. You're going away from what's giving you that momentum and that quality in the first place. So focus, 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 and thinking long-term, I find yields healthier results.
Like keeping it simple. Can you double click on keeping it simple?
Yeah. So an example being, look at this current AI paradigm, right? Like there's so many ways to slice and position yourself in this new technological wave we're in, right? And I sometimes think even in this current AI-enabled paradigm, many software companies are trying to be a lot more complex with what their AI capability can offer than the needs from the customer require. So for example, let's look at summarization, right? Like if you look at OpenAI and various other tools, people are completely blown away out of their chairs on summarizing long form text, right? I'm sure you use it in your media business, Alejandro, and I'm sure you're probably using some of it within your podcasting. The opportunity within summarizing a workflow is huge. That's quite a simple use case, right? And I think a lot of businesses, and we're probably one of them, could offer that in their platform, but then jump onto the next thing without even going deeper on that part of machine learning and what that can offer the customers. So that's what I mean by double clicking on keeping it simple. If you have something good, spend more time with it. Like go deeper on the use case, go deeper on the technology. Don't just jump and go, okay, we've cracked that, because you haven't cracked that. The opportunity to grow revenues in that beachhead, which is working, there's a lot more juice in the lemon, a lot more. And I think software companies in particular fall victim to getting momentum and then quickly jumping on to the next fruit on the tree, not knowing they've probably walked away from a piece of fruit which has a lot more juice and a lot more value to be created. That's what I mean by keeping it simple and executing well.
I love it. So Ray, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
LinkedIn. LinkedIn is probably my go-to. So just Ray Chan and Pat Snap, and you can find me. I'm not as active as I used to be, but in terms of checking in daily, yeah, always a big LinkedIn fan. So that's the place to find me.
Amazing. Well, Ray, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
Cheers, Alejandro. Take care.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.